Mission Kona Podcast, where our focus is on highlighting age group athletes doing amazing things in the triathlon space. My name is Michelle Payne.
And I am Mike Payne. We are husband and wife, amateur triathletes, parents, and self-proclaimed coffee connoisseurs, both working in corporate America.
Mike is also a triathlon coach and recently qualified for Kona in October of 2023.
Michelle completed her first half Ironman in 2021 and plans to race a full Ironman in the near future.
This podcast is a journey to discovering what it takes to be competitive in triathlon, sharing stories, and finding the inspiration to go after challenging but worthwhile goals.
Thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here. Welcome to Mission Kona Podcast, the podcast that highlights top age group athletes and their mission to Kona. I'm Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
And today we are interviewing one of those top athletes, Erin Oliphant.
So happy to be here.
Awesome. So Erin, looking at your race results, I want to highlight a couple of races that you've completed. So in 2021, 70.3 Arizona, first place in your age group. And then this year you tackled a full Ironman in Texas, getting first in your age group as well. And so Erin is in the 18 to 24 age group. And she just recently completed the Ironman World Championships in Kona just a few weeks ago. And we're going to be asking her questions about that race. And how about Michelle, why don't you give the audience some of the stats from the Ironman Kona race?
Yeah, sure. So Erin's Ironman at Kona, she finished in a total time of 10:58:36, which was third in her age group, a swim of 53:53, the first in her age group, fifth overall women, including the professionals.
That's pretty fast. That's awesome.
Crazy. Her bike, 5:56, sixth in her age group, and a run of 3:59:21, fourth in her age group. So really, really awesome race day in Kona.
Yeah. And that total time got her third in the 18 to 24 year old women's age group. So pretty spectacular first race in Kona. And considering it looks like you've only started Ironman racing, what, less than 2 years ago, right, Erin?
Yeah, that's correct.
So I
really didn't get into triathlon until a year and a half ago. So really excited about the sport and to be doing what I'm doing already and excited about what the future is looking like.
Great. And you should be pretty excited. So this is, we're excited to have you and to learn more about you. So how about we start there? So why don't you tell the audience, some information about who you are, maybe where you live and train, and, just who is Erin Oliphant?
Yeah. So I'm Erin. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs. My main background is swimming, obviously. So I swam at a small Division I school, University of the Pacific, out in California. Did that throughout college. Never really ran or biked. I actually wasn't able to run all of high school and all of college. Had a couple surgeries after college. And once I healed up from those, got into triathlon. I'm now living and training in Tempe, Arizona, which is a great place to be for triathlon. And I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, that's a great place to be. Year-round training. We had the opportunity to go to Arizona in February to run a marathon there. And that, yeah, we have friends there who do triathlon there, and I'm very jealous of
although the summer, it's pretty hot, right?
Yeah, the summer gets rough. You got to get up really early to get those long rides in, and it's still pretty hot by the time you finish. But I think having the bike lanes that we do and the opportunity to train rolling hills is awesome, and so many run paths, fantastic.
For sure.
So Erin, are you currently working? You have a full-time job?
Kind of. So I'm the volunteer assistant coach of Arizona State Swimming and Diving. So I'm on deck with them about 20 hours a week. And okay. Then I also coach club swimming at Lifetime Arizona. So I run dry land workouts for basically the whole club. And then I coached swimming for the 13 to 18 year olds who aren't our top level kids, but the ones below that. And then I also recently have joined my coach, Kayla Bowker, in her triathlon coaching. So right now I'm just doing swim stuff with her. But eventually I hope to get into triathlon coaching with her as well.
Yeah. Awesome.
Very cool. Let's see. So you said your athletic background is more geared on the swimming side. I'm guessing you've been swimming for a long time. Maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, what got you into the sport of swimming and how that kind of transitioned you into trying out triathlon.
Yeah. So I started swimming around when I was 6 years old. I think my mom was at like a local country club meet with me, and I just loved the sport. And I asked her if she could find me a place where I could do it in the winter too. So I started doing that. At the time I still played pretty competitive level soccer. So I was trying to balance the two until I was 13. And eventually chose swimming over soccer when I was 13. And to be honest, the only reason I chose swimming was because it was a lot closer. Soccer practice was an hour away, and soccer and swim practice was 5 minutes away. And that seemed better at the time. So I did that and swam and just loved swimming. I loved the fact that it was mostly on me and how hard I worked, and that was going to kind of be how successful I was going to be. It was dependent on me, and I loved pushing myself in the endurance sport way.
For sure. I feel like so we have three kids who are, they're on a swim team right now. And we just keep telling them, like, it's such a good base for anything you hope to do. I mean, the skills you learn from swimming plus the fitness you gain as well is, it'll translate into anything that you want to do in the future. So
it is a individual sport, but there's obviously a team aspect to swimming. And I think it certainly develops some mental toughness. Our kids being smaller, they're getting in water that's like 74 degrees and they're just like shivering every single day, and they struggle, but then they get in the water and they start doing their workout, and then they quickly realize, yeah, okay, I can do this. And I think that's a nice lesson that they can learn.
It's a great sport for kids and teaches so many life skills, I think. I'm lucky to have grown up with it.
Yeah. So you graduated college, and then, so tell us, what was your first triathlon? When did you first get into triathlon?
So I did a couple sprint distances, I think, when I was 13 or 14, just because my mom did them and I wanted to tag along and be like my mom. I remember doing them, but I remember being on a mountain bike and just getting destroyed on the bike and being like, I don't really like this that much. And then I ended up having some hip issues, so didn't touch triathlon again after 13 until I was 23, I think 23. So yeah, August of 2021, I think, was my first Olympic distance triathlon, and kind of what I consider to be my first triathlon, and have just kind of been hooked ever since.
Yeah. Well, so obviously you did that triathlon, but you did Arizona shortly after, I'm assuming, right? Yeah. So talk to me through, like, you finished your collegiate swimming. And so when did you decide to start doing triathlon? And I mean, you had to buy a bike. You had to, like you said, you hadn't really ran, so you had to learn how to run and stay injury free. So walk me through that.
So I was a class of 2020 graduate. So my college ended abruptly. My game plan kind of always was, after college swimming, I was going to have surgery to correct a really bad bunion I have. So it was kind of just waiting around until doctors allowed elective procedures again, so I could take care of the bunion. And because my bunion was so bad, running hurt so bad. So that's just why I hadn't ran at all. during COVID, though, before I had the bunion surgery, I got really into riding the Peloton. And I love being on our family's Peloton. And my mom, just for some background too, my mom's a triathlete. So kind of saw her training and I'm like, oh, that looks like something I want to do. But then had the bunion surgery, couldn't do much of anything. But after I was kind of healthy from the bunion surgery, I missed competing so much. I love competing. I love training for something. I didn't really like working out just for aesthetic purposes. It wasn't working with my mindset at all. I wasn't feeling healthy. So I knew I kind of wanted to do triathlon because I knew it was something I was capable of doing because I have the swimming background and I was loving the Peloton. All I had to do was figure out the running piece.
I can relate to that for sure. That's how I got started too, the Peloton. Mike's been into triathlon for a while and I was like, oh, I could do the Peloton. I could get into that. And then next thing you know, I mean.
Yeah, now she's sold the Peloton. She's fully on Zwift. She does almost all of her riding indoors. We need to get her outdoors more. Yeah. But
still do some Peloton rides sometimes on my phone just because I miss the classes.
And she also does, I mean, almost every day you do Peloton strength. So we still have the app and we use the like for Pilates and yoga. And
So huge fan. And I can also relate to needing a race to train for. I feel like the second my race season's over, I just am like, what am I doing with my life?
I need the structure of a training plan. I love training for something.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
So Erin, is your mom a top level age group athlete or is she very competitive in the sport?
She's pretty competitive. So she'd love to qualify for Kona at some point. So she's done 3 Ironmans now.
Okay.
I've had the pleasure of being at 2 of them.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
So she usually finishes in the top 20%. So she's pretty good. She played college tennis.
Yeah.
But when I said I wanted to get into triathlon, she kind of knew logistically it was going to be hard in terms of getting all the gear I needed. But because I'm so fortunate because she's been in it and knows and has gone through the process of getting a bike and then realizing the bike wasn't good enough and then getting another bike and then being like, nope, I need a tri bike now and then getting a tri bike. For Christmas, my mom and my dad were very nice to me in January of 2021 and got me my own tri bike. So I've got my Cervelo P series now. It's not like the top of the line one, but it's a nice bike.
Oh yeah. The Cervelos are among the fastest bikes, right? So, that's cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned a little bit ago that you work with a coach. Tell me a little bit about, you know, at what point you considered working with a coach and kind of the value that brings to the table. I know there's some people that go for a while without a coach and, you know, kind of the difference of being self-coached versus having a coach. What's been your experience?
So I think I was without a coach for about a month when I signed up for my first triathlon. And my mom was receiving calls at least once a day, sometimes multiple times a day, with me asking questions about triathlon and asking what to do. And I think after a month, she just got tired of me calling. And I was like, and my birthday was around that time. And she's like, birthday gift, I'm getting you a coach because I can't deal with this anymore. And so she just reached out to her coach, who she actually met through a mental performance class, because they both happen to be mental performance coaches as well. And so she introduced me to Coach Kayla and I've been working with Kayla ever since. And she just adds tremendous value. I have a large background on how to coach. I've been coaching myself with swimming since I was about 16 and just have read a ton on how to train for aerobic sports. And actually a lot of the books on how to train for swimming have some triathlon background in them. But having a coach who structures it for you, so it takes the thinking, takes out like your daily decision making, is huge. Someone to hold you accountable. And it's someone for me just to talk through everything and kind of helped me gain confidence. And I work with her on a mental performance coaching side too, which honestly has probably been bigger than the triathlon coaching side for me, because I had some things to work out from my swim career, and she's just helped me tremendously. So
sure. That's something we believe strongly in too, is like the mental, I mean, obviously the physical fitness is so important, but like your mental strength is arguably just as important, right? Like if you're not in the right mindset, or you can't, you know, get yourself through some tough circumstances,
Iron Man is a long day, and there's so many decisions that you have to make, and you can sabotage yourself in a thousand different ways. And your race can go from being in the top three to being outside of the top 10, just because of what you're telling yourself when you're racing. So that's awesome.
I actually got a flat tire on the bike at Kona this year. And it sucked. Like no one wants to get a flat, but unfortunately it's part of the sport. And I changed it, and I was pretty cranky, I can't lie. But I think because of the work I had done with Kayla, I was able to just set it aside, refocus, kind of reestablish my goals. And I got off the bike, and I looked at where I was at, and I was like, okay, I can still be under 11 hours. I just have to run a sub-4 marathon. Like, you can do that. And I was able to refocus, I think because of the mental training work I had done with her.
Yeah. Wow.
That's cool.
And we'll get more into the specific race in Kona, but about that. I know you grew up with your mom racing. Did you know from a pretty early age that you wanted to race in Kona, or you wanted, like, when did you decide that, like, I really want to qualify for Kona? Do you remember that day or the time?
I think probably when I signed up for my first triathlon, really my first Olympic, I was like, I think I want to do Kona, because I did one Olympic distance, one half Ironman, one Ironman. So my thought process kind of was like, okay, I want to get to the point where I'm racing at Kona. And I remember being at family dinner with my dad, and I think I had done the Olympic distance one yet, but I hadn't done the half Ironman distance. And I jokingly said, I was like, hey dad, if I qualify for Kona, will you finance it? And he's like, yeah, it's Kona, of course. But I don't think he actually thought like it was going to happen within a year of that conversation, but kind of had my eye on Kona pretty early on.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk about, I guess, Texas a little bit. What was memorable, I guess, about your first Ironman Texas, maybe training for it, you know, the build up to that Ironman distance, anything memorable about that build, or even the race itself?
Yeah. I think during the build, I think the most memorable piece for me is when I first got a coach, I told her, I was like, I like want a day a week off. Like, I don't want to train on Sundays. And when I started my Texas build, all of a sudden I was like, I only have one day off a month. What is this? And just being like, Kayla. And she's like, look, like, you have big goals. Like, we could do the day off a month, but it's going to get busy. And I think it will increase the chances of you getting injured if we try and pack it all in. So if you're okay with it, let's do it. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I think I care about more, my goals more than the day off. So I remember that. I remember some hard rides, just crying, because I'm like, I don't want to do this, riding 5 hours by myself, especially because I work Saturday mornings when usually the group rides are. So I do majority of my long stuff by myself. So kind of learning to get through that, my first build. And then at the race, that race had the worst headwind I have ever experienced in my life. It was just a constant 25 mile per hour headwind, just right at you. For 20 miles on the bike, because Texas is a two loop course where you go 20 miles out, 20 miles back, 20 miles out, 25 or 20 miles back, and the headwind's just pounding you. So to get through that was definitely the most memorable part of Texas.
And that probably some mental mental strength there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get through this, but I'm going to have to see this again later in the day when I have to go through that again. But, and it's different riding on Peloton versus riding, for 5+ hours, during a triathlon. So
yeah, I saw it in my ear, just yelling motivational things at me, gotta do it myself.
Yeah. Coming from really just a swim background, this was the first time you've trained for a full Ironman. Also first time you've trained for a marathon by itself, right? You hadn't raced a marathon before this. I'm really curious, how did transitioning into running long distance work out? Have you maintained being injury free? Are you doing mostly low volume, higher intensity, or are you full into like the high volume, low intensity running?
Yeah, we're still working on it. Definitely still don't do as much run volume as I'd like to do. I mean, I think running is definitely my weak point. And I would love to just attack it, but you know, you can't with running because you will get injured. So it's been a very slow process. Luckily, I think my coach is phenomenal and she kind of has me on a 5-year vision plan. So it's a very slow build up to running. We still don't do a ton of speed work. It's just getting resilient, doing some long, slow stuff, but not super long. I think the furthest I ran was like 17 miles.
That's still pretty good. I know for new athletes, sometimes they don't go over 15 miles. I've even heard 13 miles. But that makes for a very challenging marathon. So awesome.
Yeah, well, so let's switch gears, I guess, into the race in Kona just a few weeks ago. When did you arrive to the island to kind of get acclimated? I know people like to get there up to a week ahead of time. What kind of schedule did you have there?
So I arrived Saturday and stayed. My coach was racing, so she was nice enough to offer to let me sleep on their pull-out couch for the first few nights I was there. So arrived Saturday, slept there until Tuesday, and then my mom arrived Tuesday, and we switched places and stayed about 40 minutes north of Kona for the couple days before the race. Nice place with air conditioning. So nice.
That's hard to find there. Usually they don't have air. Yeah.
We spent a week in Kona this July, and we got a lot of time to we swam every single day at the pier and just loved the ocean swimming, and we ran on Ulihi Drive every day, I think, too. So it was just beautiful. So we're looking forward to we're gonna be there this next year. So we're looking forward to
awesome
training for that. So
it's an awesome experience.
Did you do any specific heat training to prepare for the humidity? Obviously training in Arizona, it's hot, but it's not as humid or not humid at all. Yeah.
So don't have the humidity here, but we do have way higher temperatures than Kona. And because of the way my schedule works, I work early in the morning where a lot of people are trying to train. So my starting early, I still can't start until about 8:30 AM. I did a lot of workouts when it was over 100 out. And I guess that's as specific as my heat training got. But I got to Kona and I had no issues with the humidity, I think just because of how hot in Phoenix is during the summer. Like my long rides, I'd finish and it'd be 113 and be like, cool, awesome. Kona can't feel too much worse than this, even if there's humidity.
Sure.
But one thing I will say is I did try and, change my nutrition plan a bit to accommodate for the humidity, just by increasing my fluid take, even if I didn't feel like super thirsty, and increasing the salt for the sweating and the humidity.
Yeah, sure.
So let's talk about what we're going to break down each discipline of the sport. We're going to start with the swim and then talk about the training that you did with the swim and then talk about the actual swim during the race. Okay. So your swim, again, Michelle mentioned it, but 53 minutes and 53 seconds, first in your age group. and fifth if you include all the pro women. So that's just you have an incredible weapon when it comes to the swim. And I would love to hear, did your training change much at all from what college swimming was? We didn't talk about what swim stroke you were in college, but I'm assuming the sets were long, but probably not as long as college swimming. But you probably were doing more endurance stuff. But talk with me about like a typical week. How many swims a week? Typical volume and intensity?
So I swim about 3 to 4 times a week. And in general, I would say there's one workout that's 3,000 yards, one workout that's 4,000 yards, and one workout that's 5,000 yards. I hardly ever go above 5,000 yards. And the intensity, I would say swimming is when I do the most speed and intensity work because I have that large base already developed. But it's a lot of 200s, 300s, 400s. Right. At slightly faster than race pace, I would say.
Yeah, we hear a lot of 20 by 100s or 10 by 200s at threshold, but it sounds like you're doing some of that even longer, 400s potentially. So that's interesting to hear, but you have that experience. So what would you say your threshold pace is for the swim per 100 yards?
About 110.
About 110. Okay. And then that's 53 minute swim is right there. So do you get any open water training in?
Not really. So I was pretty nervous going into Kona. I wasn't sure how the wave start was going to go. Hadn't really done that before. At Olympic nationals, I guess it was a wave start, but you get to push off a pier and go. And also I was one of the first waves, so I didn't have to worry about passing people. And this was going to be the first swim where I like had to start in the middle of the pack, and I knew I was going to have to pass a lot of people. So I was nervous about that with a combination of the sighting, which I don't have a ton of experience in. But it ended up being okay.
It transitioned great. Yeah. You nailed it. Was this your first ocean swim?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
So anything specific that you remember during the swim? I know you mentioned some things, but we watching it on TV, they talked about it being fairly choppy, mm-hmm. almost like, I think hilly is what I've heard from some people, where you can see the buoys sometimes, but then when you look up, you can't see anything but the wave in front of you. So, walk us through the race.
The swim starts definitely, I think, the most rememberable portion of it. I did not know what to expect. Honestly, I thought we started on the beach. Definitely should have watched some film from prior races. But you start treading in the water, and there's a line of surfboarders kind of trying to create a line and hold you guys back until the gun goes off. And everyone's just kind of treading, fighting for their spot, trying to be in front. And then the gun goes off, and there's like elbows everywhere and kicks, and you definitely get hit, and you're kind of just sprinting for the first 50 meters trying to get away from everybody. And then as the swim goes on and you get settled, it feels good. And then all of a sudden you catch that next wave of people. And from that point on, it's just like making sure you're sighting enough to avoid hitting people more than worrying about the buoys. It kind of did feel hilly. I think that's a good way to describe it. But I think I just kept focused on just keeping my tempo up without kicking too hard, and felt good. It was a little warm. That's what I would say is I like colder water for racing. So even in the swim skin, I was a little hot, but it was pretty. You could see the fish.
And when did your age group start? Were you quite a ways back?
I think we were the fourth wave.
Fourth. Okay. So yeah, you did have quite a few groups to kind of catch up to and get through. So
yeah. And historically this race was a mass start. So everybody in the age group, men and women, started at one time, which would have benefited you, I think, quite a bit, because then you would have been out in the lead of that group. And you would have had other really fast swimmers to draft off of and sight off of without having to swim through groups. But now that I think it's going to be age group wave starts from now on. Yeah. So
All right. So you get out of the water, 53 minutes, 53 seconds. Awesome swim time. And get ready to take off on your bike. How were you feeling at that point?
I felt so good at that point. I had no idea what to expect from an ocean swim. So I was hoping to be right around 54, but I was prepared to see a time of about an hour, just because I didn't know with the ocean swim how it was going. And to be honest, I felt bad in the water. I think because it was just waves and I wasn't used to the waves, but got out, saw the 53 minutes. I was like, okay, let's go. Got on the bike course and there's this beautiful rainbow. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a good day. I like it.
That's cool. I hadn't heard about it.
No, yeah. So. You're the first one that's talked about that. That's cool. Everybody else is probably panicking and you're like, and just like, oh, this is awesome. I just swam 53 minutes. Look at that rainbow.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe the 53 minute swim, so many people missed it.
That maybe that's what it was. You and Lucy Charles were the only people that saw the, so the bike, so you did a 5:56 bike, but you did say you had a flat tire. So it would have been faster than that, but that's still a really great bike split for somebody with limited biking experience. Yeah. Talk to me, like a normal week in training, how many bike rides? Did you always do a long bike ride during the week?
I'd say I was biking about 3 to 4 times a week. Long ride, like the 5-hour rides, I'd probably do every other week. And then the week I didn't have the long ride, it'd be a 3-hour ride, but it would be at a higher intensity with usually a 40-50 minute run after it.
Do you train with power?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I was lucky enough. Actually, my mom bought a power meter for herself and then never installed it. And she's like, oh, you can just use it for the build up to Kona and at Kona. And I was like, awesome. And since Kona, she's like, you know what? You can keep the power meter. I'll just get myself another one. I was like, cool. But the power meter has been great to have. I think it's probably one of the most valuable training tools.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And they've become more affordable now. Like 10 years ago, they were over $1,000. Now you can get pedal-based power meters for $300, $350 mm-hmm. bucks. Most crank-based power meters about the same. So how about any indoor biking? Do you use Zwift? Do you use any indoor training?
So I do have the kicker. So I'd say majority of my rides, really the long rides are the only ones I do outdoors. The rest I do on the trainer, but I don't have Zwift or anything. Just as a rule for myself, because I'm so busy, but I also can get so hooked on TV as I only let myself watch TV while I'm on the trainer. So I usually use the trainer as my time to catch up on The Bachelor.
Nice. Love it. So does your coach prescribe you certain workouts during the week to do on the trainer, certain interval based?
Yes. So yeah. They're all programmed, in, which makes it easy.
Nice. Nice.
During your buildup, do you remember one ride that was like really, that you really mentally struggled through that you think helped prepare you for Kona?
Yeah. I think sweet spot sessions, I always got nervous about. I think a common session we do is just 5 by 8 minutes at sweet spot, which is 85% to 88% of FTP on 2 to 3 minutes of recovery. And then sometimes there's more stuff surrounding that, but that would be the primary focus. And I think I kind of always got nervous about that because in my head, I translated that most to how my Kona performance was going to go, whether I could hit those numbers or not. And 8 minutes is also just like a lot of time to be focused on the trainer. But I think those sessions really helped prepare me and got me ready.
Yeah. Sweet spot training is great for Ironman triathlon. Obviously it's harder than race pace, but
yes.
You're doing it on on tired legs with mm-hmm. busy weeks. So it's a great workout, and you're not the only athlete that has talked about sweet spot training. So I think it's a sweet spot might be a key mm-hmm. secret for our listeners. if you aren't doing sweet spot training, maybe it's something to consider.
So take us through race day in Kona. I know you said you got on the bike, you were feeling good. What do you remember from that race day?
I remember getting out of the swim. I was happy, but I was also pretty hungry. So I took the time biking through town to just kind of get some calories in. And that was kind of just my focus until I got out onto the Queen K. And when I made the turn onto the Queen K, that's when I saw the rainbow. I was like, this is so pretty. And I was pretty much, there weren't a ton of other riders around me. So I was like, okay, like I'm doing really well. Like, and I think that just gives you confidence and honestly happiness as you start your ride. So I get going, my legs feel good. I'm hitting exactly the numbers I wanted to be at for that point in the race. Eventually, I think around like 40 miles in, there's a group that I'm not necessarily riding with. I tend to be a really good downhill rider and not the best uphill rider. So a lot of times I'd get passed on the uphills and then I'd pass everyone who passed me on the downhills. So that was kind of going up until I got the flat. Then I felt good until I got the flat and I kind of, all of a sudden the road just felt really bumpy and I was felt like I was pushing watts and not moving. And I was like, crap. And I turned my head to look behind me and there was sealant all over the road. And I was like, no.
So that was my question I was going to ask. So you, so I'm a tech bike, like a bike tech guy. I do all my own bike maintenance. I tinker all day long. So you are riding tubeless. It sounds like.
I am recently, yep. 2 weeks before the race decided to go tubeless, which I'm now like, I don't know. That was a great decision.
Well, so they're brand new tires, with fresh sealant and it didn't seal. This is also an issue that I've had personally where I've been racing tubeless for a couple of years and I haven't got a ton of flats, but when I do get flats, they don't seem to seal. And I know it's the high pressure road versus the tubeless was designed mostly for mountain bikes at low pressure and they seal better. So I'm still debating if tubeless is what I'm going to use or go to latex. But a lot of questions we get from people are if you're running tubeless, how do you change a flat tire? Well, you figured it out, right? You just threw a tube in.
Yep.
So exactly. It can be done, guys.
Yeah. And it was way easier than changing a tube tire because it was already unsealed. I just had to get the tube in, get the CO2 out and on. Unfortunately, it was my rear tire, which I'm always like, damn, like if it was going to be a flat, I'd rather it be the front. But yeah, you just throw the tube in, put the CO2 in and it kind of just seals and took off and continued.
Awesome. Well, like you said earlier too, like the to be in the right mindset through all of that. I mean, you were able to do what you needed to do, get it done and get back on the road. So,
yeah. And people have asked me since the race, like what the hardest part of the race was. And I think those last 30 miles of the bike after I got the flat, just mentally trying to keep myself in it without being super angry and just like letting things be and trying to just be okay with it, be in that moment.
Right. I mean, at that point, I mean, there's arguably some people that would just be like, I'm done, you know? So, but you didn't give up.
No,
you kept going.
And you did mention earlier that you had 11-hour goal, right? So as you were riding in the last 30 miles, you were probably starting to do math in your head to say, okay, what do I need to do now? But you had a great swim. So you knew that you were banking some time there. So you knew that there was still a chance. And I think that's the key. In the race for any athlete, like there's always time to make up for whatever happens. And especially in an Ironman, it's just such a long race and just staying mentally in it.
Solid, yeah.
I think what I absolutely love about Ironman is there are so many different factors that go into having a good race. And it's going to be really, really rare if a perfect race ever does happen. So being prepared for things to go wrong, but also knowing like from a competition aspect, it's highly unlikely any of your competitors are going to have a perfect day out there either. Right. It just comes with the sport. So knowing you just have to keep your feet in the moment and do what you can.
So you make the turn on Palani, you head down, you give off your bike and you start the run. Your run training, like you mentioned that you kind of just started running just a couple of years ago. Walk me through a typical week. You said you weren't doing much intensity. So what was your average volume? Or would you cap off at?
I would say I never did more than 30 miles in a week. Most of the runs were around an hour, with some longer runs towards the end. But I did a lot of training kind of anytime that my workout said race pace, my coach wanted me to train a little faster than race pace because we knew at Texas, I think my average was 10:30s on the marathon. And I'm a better runner than that. I just don't have the resiliency to not walk the whole marathon. My legs just don't like the end of it. So just did a lot of training around probably for me, it was like a lot of 8:30 running, getting that pace and then recovering a little and getting back to 8:30s.
And when you, I didn't see your time on for Arizona. What was your run for the half, 70.3? Do you remember your pace?
It was holding 8:30s.
It was holding 8:30s. Okay. Well, that gives me a good idea. I mean, I think a new runner, you can't always do high volume, right? So you have to do some intensity, but that kind of answers that question. And your run for in Kona, 3:59:21. So sub 4 hours for your second ever marathon, right?
Yes. Yes.
So I think I could definitely say you are a runner. You may not think you're a runner, but and your coach has a 5-year plan. And I think that's exactly what needed to happen. So you look forward to better run success coming just as you get more resilience.
Mm-hmm. I do. I'm excited for it. I wish that I could just put in a ton of work now and make it happen, but I think I am very injury prone. So I know that this is the smart way to do it and just gotta stick with the process.
Yeah. Easier said than done, maybe for sure. But so kind of take us through you started that run. Anything memorable from the run in Kona?
Yeah. So I had calculated it when I got off the bike and I was like, okay, like if you are under 4 hours, you will break 11 hours. And I was like, in training, you run 8:30s all the time. That gives you a little wiggle room to walk. Like you can do this. You can run under sub 4. And at the beginning, I was just telling myself that. I was telling like, just keep running. You can do this. In my head, I kind of divided the course into sections. So my first section was running on a Leahy. And I was like, okay, we're going to keep running through all of that. Like we'll run, jog through the aid stations, make sure you're getting the nutrition, but we'll stay jogging through them. And my first mile, I think was about 8:40. My next mile was 9 minutes. And then I kind of settled in and my legs started to feel good. And I think I was right around 8:15 for the next like 4 miles. And I was like, okay, like we can do this. Like you're feeling good. We've got this. Then my next section was getting up Pelini and then the first section of the Queen K. And I kind of knew I was going to walk up Pelini. That was kind of in my head. I was going to refill. I carry a collapsible flask with me on the run. So I knew I was going to refill with water kind of while going up the hill. Just took like a little break. It wasn't worth it to me, I think, to use all the energy to run up that hill because it's so steep. But then just turn on the Queen K, get back in that jog. Was still kind of hitting pace. And then next section was Energy Lab. Hadn't really run Energy Lab. I didn't do it before the race. Didn't know what to expect from it. Definitely is a little lonelier. That's when it started to hurt pretty bad. So that's when walking through aid stations became a big thing and just taking my time.
And how did the heat impact you? I mean, at that point, were you really starting to depend on those aid stations and feeling the effects of the heat?
Yeah, I think just from like a thirst standpoint, like I carry water with me, so that was fine. But I was like, I want the Gatorade. I want the cold Gatorade. I want the ice down my tri-suit now. But it also almost gives you something to look forward to, which is nice. You're like, okay, I have a mile and a half. Like I can get to the next aid station. And then you're just like taking it in those mile and a half segments, which is nice.
Well, I feel like watching like the coverage from home and seeing the pros, I mean, they were walking through the aid stations. They were getting the ice and the water and all that.
So. Chelsea Sodaro, I guess it looked like she was running, but this was a fast walk, really, is what it was through her aid stations. And she had the fastest run of the day. It was one of the fastest runs ever for a female. So I think that's the key, is making sure you're getting nutrition. Nutrition is more important than that time during the aid stations.
Right.
So important. I think it's something that's overlooked a lot. But I think that's what's going to matter almost most in an Ironman, is if you can get the calories in and teach your body to, and training how to tolerate calories while training.
Yeah. And you carrying a handheld was probably a great decision too, because then you could have those calories at any time. You didn't have to wait, because we know that the aid stations were a little bit more spread out than traditionally. Yes. So that was also a good choice. Did you see a lot of other athletes with handhelds, or did most people not have
them? Definitely not really.
Yeah.
I think people generally don't like to carry things, but I didn't see a lot of like waist belts or hydro packs or anything either. But I think on a course that's that hot and humid, I think having fluid on me all the time was a really good choice, at least for me.
I'm taking notes. I mean,
I still had 2 cups of fluid at aid stations, in addition to my handheld, which I filled up, I think, 3 times during the race.
Right.
So,
did you have anybody on the course, whether it was the bike or the run, telling you where you were, what your position was, keeping you mentally engaged?
So I had told my mom I did not want to know until the last 6 miles of the run. It just wasn't, I had my goals and how I wanted to execute the race. And in my mind, the race didn't really come down until the last 6 miles for me. Cause I knew for me, that's when it was going to hurt. That's when I was going to want to walk the most. But I also knew that's when people could gain on me the most, and where I could kind of throw strategy out the window and just race, because there's less than an hour of the race left. But at mile 25, so at the top of Palani, that's the first time I had, first time since mile 7, I had seen my mom on the run. And that's when she's like, "Erin, you're in third. Fourth is 4 seconds back." And she was, I looked back and she was, and fifth was right behind her. So we were all kind of coming in close together. But I'm so glad she was in that point, because I'm taller. I'm 5'8" with pretty long legs. So that was at the top of the hill, and I was able to use my long legs, and I just flew down Palani. And my last mile, I think, was a 7:03.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So you made that gap. What did you end up, fourth place? How far back were they at the finish?
A minute.
Oh, that's incredible. Wow. And to run a 7-minute mile at the end of an Ironman, that's pretty encouraging. Cool.
So what was the finish line experience like for you?
Insane. Just, it is the coolest finish of anything in the world, I think. You're running and you get to Alihi and the crowd just starts going. And when you get to the red carpet, it's just all lined with people. And I was finishing kind of, as the sun was starting to set. So it was just, it looked beautiful outside. The red carpet was just glowing. You see all the flags. It's just, I mean, you're part of it's you're relieved to be done, but you're also like, holy cow, I just finished what's considered to be one of the toughest Ironman courses in the world. And for me, it was like, I did pretty well too.
I
was stoked. I had realized I broke 11 hours, despite the difficulties of the day with the flat tire. And I was like, the moment of pride is overwhelming. And to have that many people just cheering for you is surreal.
That's awesome. A huge congrats to you for achieving those goals. Third in your age group. I mean, really an incredible day all around, overcoming some challenges, but, you know, persevering through it all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, Erin, I think, hearing your story, there's so much that you absolutely should be proud of and to look forward to in the future. And I'm excited to continue following your journey. And can you tell me, like, your family seeing you finish? There had to be a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
And tell me, like, I mean, the commitment that you, that any athlete, every athlete likely listening to this podcast or either doing Ironmans or going to be doing Ironmans, you have to sacrifice a lot. And when you finish and when you're rewarded with a result like you have, like I'm sure emotions were flowing and yeah. Tell me about anything that you can remember.
So I think what's made my triathlon journey so special for me is I just hit a huge plateau during my swimming career. I swam some pretty fast times when I was 15 years old. And some of it was, I had sinus surgeries and two hip surgeries during my final years of swimming. But I worked my butt off. I just could never hit my swim times again. Just never did anything special in the pool from age 16 to 22. Despite all the hard work I put in, and I just never saw results. And I started questioning whether hard work does pay off, because it really just didn't feel like it was. So then finishing third in my age group at Kona and finally seeing what I consider years of hard work paying off, because even though I've been only been in triathlon for a couple of years now, those years of swimming and the aerobic base I developed through those years of swimming, I think are a huge part of why I can be successful at triathlon now. So to have all those years pay off and like all the tears I went through after not going best times, to come to Kona and perform the way I did, and to have my mom there who was with me through all the tears there, she was crying, I was crying. It was just a really emotional day and a really special moment that I got to share with her.
Yeah. Very proud moment. Awesome. Well, that great finish. We're going to jump into some fun questions and see, I know the first question I have, I saw on your Instagram that you're an ice cream enthusiast. So tell me what that means and what is your favorite ice cream?
I just love ice cream. I love going to all the local like ice cream shops in the area. And it's just something I crave all the time, especially in high school. I'd come home from swim meets and eat, I'm not kidding, a quart of ice cream, just like by the spoonful. Usually rainbow sherbet though, so it's a little
creamy. But so anyway. I was going to ask, what flavor?
I love rainbow sherbet, but whenever I try a new place, I feel like I need to have a scoop of their vanilla. And then a scoop of one of like the fun specialty ones, because I think vanilla is a consistent flavor across the board. If you can't do a good vanilla, you're probably not a good ice cream shop.
So true.
It's just like pizza places. You have to do the cheese first and then you can try everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Did you get to try in Kona? When we took our kids there too, and I think they had the Kona ice.
With ice cream?
With ice cream. I don't know if you got to try that, but.
Got some pineapple and mango Dole Whip.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know, we didn't get the Dole Whip when we were there. We'll have to hit that up when we.
Yeah,
when
but
we
that was that. Like a daily thing. It was like, okay,
where are we getting the Kona ice from? We did find some really good places. There's one that's not too far from the pier that we're excited to go back to. So
yeah. What about if you could spend a day training with like a professional triathlete, is there any, you know, specific individual that you would love to spend a day with?
I think I would love to do a swim with Lucy. She'd kick my butt, but I think it'd be fun. Maybe she could give me some sighting tips because I'm not good at it. Then I think I love biking with my coach. So she actually just got submitted her pro card or activated her pro card. So I guess she's a professional triathlete, and I've had the pleasure of biking with her a few times. But I think I'd love to just continue to bike with her more often.
And remind us again your coach's name?
Kayla Bowker.
Okay. Awesome.
Phenomenal runner. So don't like running with her as much, but love biking with her.
Someday, Erin. I think you're going to get this run figured out. It might not take 5 years. I think it's sooner rather than later. What is your favorite piece of triathlon gear right now?
I love my Trace Pina's running shorts. So super comfy, have pockets that hold my phone and my keys really well, and can fit nutrition with those items. So
I'm a fan of those too. Those and their tri kits are my favorite as well.
Their tri kits. They're so yeah, comfy.
They are.
Can't see myself racing in anything else. No.
Are you on the Tres Piñas team? Are you on a club or team?
It's been announced for 2023, but yeah, I'll be Tres Piñas member for next season. But I also will keep my Moxie Multisport affiliation. So that's a local triathlon shop we have in Arizona.
Yeah, when we did the marathon in Mesa, we went to that triathlon shop because we don't have anything like that in the Midwest. They have, I geeked out on all their bikes and all the gear, and I bought some Moxie t-shirts and really, really cool shop. Yeah. And the guys, the bike tech guy that was there, like, he knows more about bike stuff than anybody I've ever met. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, you guys talked for a while.
We did talk. We did chat for way too long.
I love that.
What is, so, you know, this podcast is focused on age group athletes who maybe want to qualify for Kona, or maybe they're just getting into the sport and they want to understand what Kona is or what it takes to qualify for Kona. So what is a piece of advice that you would give one of these new athletes or an athlete who's been trying to qualify for Kona?
I think my biggest piece of advice, and something I've really learned for myself in the last year, is that training smart is just as important as training hard. I think a lot of us, we get into triathlon because we like to work hard and we like to push ourselves. But if you do that too much, your body is going to break, and you're going to end up with injuries. So learning how to be like, okay, I need to take this day off to let my knee injury recover before it gets worse, or really just being disciplined enough to take your easy workout days easy and not just to push it because you feel like it. So I think that's my biggest piece of advice, is just train smart as well as train hard.
I love it.
Yeah. Perfect advice. Agree. So what's next for you? Do you have any races planned? Hopefully you're enjoying a little bit of an off season as well.
So I'd qualified for 70.3 worlds before I qualified for Kona. So I had already paid for that and not paying for a race and not racing in it. So headed to St. George on Wednesday to race on Friday.
Oh, awesome.
I'll take time off after that for a bit. And then I think my first race on the calendar next year is Oceanside 70.3.
And then did you get a slot for next year's Kona in Kona, or do you have plans to?
I don't know. I haven't figured that one out yet. Okay. Kona's obviously expensive and I age up, so I'll be with the big dogs next year. I mean, I hope to still, I'm racing Ironman Coeur d'Alene. So I hope I qualify there, but I don't know if I'll be able to take the spot. I'll be transitioning from volunteer assistant at ASU to hopefully a paid position, college coaching somewhere. So I don't know timing wise how that's going to work and, if I'll be able to go to Kona at all, even if I do qualify. So we'll see. I definitely want to have the option though.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I mean, well, so next year there will be more women's spots for, and Coeur d'Alene's one of those races that they will have extra slots at. So when you're, we'll be doing a podcast about Coeur d'Alene sometime next year. So we'd love to have you on and chat about what your training is prior to that race. So where can our listeners, where should they follow you? What's your Instagram? And then, you did say your coaching. So give out a plug for your coaching business.
So my Instagram is Erin, Erin.oli, just the first three letters of my last name. Post some training stuff. Probably will start posting more as I get into the triathlon coaching more. But then I also am now a coach for Where Your Feet Takes You, which is my coach Kayla Bowker's business. We just really believing in our athletes and their ability fully, and want to help everybody reach their potential and find joy in the sport and find purpose kind of through triathlon. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for for joining us today and talking us through, you know, kind of your build and your experience in Kona. It all around incredible day, and it was great getting to know you.
Yeah, I loved chatting with you guys today. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mission Kona Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Do you know an athlete who has a great story for a future podcast? Send us a message at missionkonapodcast.com.
Reach out anytime through our website or on Instagram at Mission Kona Podcast.
Till next time, think positive, have fun, and stay focused on your mission to Kona.